You're listening to Wins Above Fantasy, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network with Van Burnett and Steve Gisuelli.
Welcome back, everyone. It is Wins Above Fantasy, episode 80. Little mini milestone there, Steve. December 1st, another milestone. And it is the last month before the new year where we will see a bunch of 2023 stat lines come to fruition. And today we are looking at the projected stat lines. I'm Van Burnett, joined as always by Mr. Steve Gisuelli. You guys can follow the podcast on Twitter at WinsAbovePod. I'm at Van_verified and Steve is at Stav8818. Steve, projection season is always a fun time to squint, challenge, look at what they did last year, how the situation's changed. Super pumped about it, man, but I cannot lie. I have not been thinking baseball the past 2 weeks. I am deep in World Cup fever and got to give a shout out to the USA. Hopefully, as this comes out, we're nice and ready for Netherlands, get a little victory. But we're not here to talk about soccer. I just had to lead in with that. How's it going, man?
Yeah, honestly, me too. I've been distracted by another sport as well. That's because my New Jersey Devils are in first place in the National Hockey League. They have won 16 of 17 games.
I thought I saw my Twitter. We both are dipping out of baseball for a brief moment here, which is allowed.
And they've been pretty tough for the last 10 years, so... I am very excited and occupied with that. But, it's nice. I've been listening to a few baseball podcasts here and there. I know you were on the Corner podcast with Nick. I listened to that last week. My episode with Nick on the Corner for our mock draft review came out, I think it was Monday, which was, nice to listen back to some parts of that. There were some good laughs. I had some good laughs at yours, too. And
yeah. I'm an hour in on yours. Right when I thought I was out of the line of fire.
You caught the stray?
I caught the stray of Ranger Suarez. I cannot get away from that. At least it's not Yasmani Grandal. But, it's hilarious content, man. And I think Nick has obviously areas of knowledge that and stats that he throws out that aren't typically in my Rolodex. So that part is fascinating to me. But, it's still a guessing game to some extent. And there's still moments where I think if last year taught us any lesson, it's just because Nick doesn't agree with a certain pick of yours or how early you took it doesn't mean it won't be a good pick or a good guy to plant a flag on. So,
yeah, and Nick basically acknowledged that in all of his analysis, too. It's just, as a good podcast host and analyst, there has to be some pushback. And obviously, his knowledge, especially of pitching and everything like that, is, second to no one. So, it was great. I got, a great chuckle out of a few of your lines there in the pod with Nick. It was just, obviously... if you haven't listened to either one of those, be sure to check it out. It's on this very podcast feed. So I'm sure if you're listening to Wins Above Fantasy, you have seen those. So great way to, pass the cold winter months. If you're not a diehard U.S. Men's National team fan like Van is, or you don't have the fortune of rooting for the New Jersey Devils like I do, and are just waiting for baseball season, which is what I'm doing too, but there's some great podcasts coming out on the Corner for that mock draft review, so be sure to check all those out. That's me being a company man there and plugging everyone's mock draft review podcast.
Fantastic. And on the company line, I loved what Nick had to say about Pitcherless 8.0 having some new stats that might be some game changers. I liked what you guys were talking about on the whole, what was it, like the swing rate on
yeah, like competitive pitches, pitches. We can't spoil, not that we know much about it anyway, but we can't give too much away there. But obviously, with
it's a tease.
But with the new year, a new PLA, they come out with something amazing every year, and I'm sure there'll be something super excited. But yeah, that was my face kind of lit up where it's like, oh, maybe that should be a stat. And it's like, Nick was like, wait a second. That's going to be a stat. Yeah, that might be a stat. Yeah.
Well, from the tease there to the segue of the show topic, we're talking projections, Steve. And, when I wasn't listening to like Stars and Stripes and American Soccer podcast. I did check out a Hacks and Jacks pod. Scott Chu was talking about how a steamer is traditionally a very conservative projection system, and that's what we're looking at.
It's today. It's the only one out right now. Yeah, it's still
only one
early.
That's out. Yeah. So I think a trend I've found, and I'm curious your thoughts, is that there are some conservative projections on hitters, and then on the pitching side, I think it's almost the inverse where, you know, they just don't buy a lot of the breakouts, or, you know, it just basically look, which I guess would be conservative to be fair, but the pitchers I thought were way conservative in a lot of cases. So we'll have to talk about that, but to put a wrapper on this whole show, are we calling it interesting projections, or I'm not buying it? I mean, how would you give the spin? Because we got a little bit of a range.
We've done here. Like puzzling projections before, but, you know, I was thinking as I was getting ready for the show, like, oh, hey, you know, what's this title going to be? But maybe like he's projected for what, or this projection is what, you know, kind of a way this to spice up an interesting or surprising projections, a better title for the show than that. Just to kind of, mix it up. I know you've gone with the show title Puzzling Projections before. But yeah, I think it's a good point by Scott. And that's kind of why there is some buying opportunities for these guys, right? The projection system is supposed to be conservative. It's supposed to, you know, that's inherently what it does. It, you know, brings things back to a mean and regresses, you know, stats basically to try and figure out mathematically what a player is projected to do. But if players did exactly what they're projected to do, none of us would be playing fantasy baseball, right? And I think I was listening to it on another podcast. It was probably Rates and Barrels. I think it was Eno Saris. And he talked about, you know, how projections sometimes have to toe a line between, like, playing time and actually projecting what a player is going to do. And if that's good, sometimes those things don't add up, if that makes sense. I think they're actually talking about a player that we'll talk about a little bit later as a teaser here. But, you know, if a player is projected to have a really good WRC plus, but then only have 80 games of playing time, like, it's one or the other, essentially, right? And projections have to kind of find a middle ground there that is not going to be an accurate representation of what's going to happen. Either the guy's going to be good and he's going to play a bunch, or he's going to be bad and not, you know, not meet those projections. It'll never be like in the middle with a good projection.
Jazz just Chisholm or somebody that.
Unless, it's exactly. They have to hedge their bets somehow, right?
Yep. Okay, well, let's jump in, Steve. We got a long list of names, and it's a super exciting topic. But let's start at the very top, and we're going to lead with hitters. And right now, granted it's very early on the NFBC drafts, this guy is the top ADP player, and it is your boy, if I can call him that, Trey Turner. With that said, the projections are in for Steamer, and in my opinion, seem to be criminally low. Turner, getting projected out at 157 games, just a .286 batting average, 19 homers, 23 steals, 89 runs, 78 RBI. Listen, it's a good line for any other player, but for Trey Turner, he's a career .302 batting average guy. They're dropping him 16 points. The homers at 19, I mean, he hit, what, 2 years ago, he was way above that. And then last year, I thought 21 was the floor. Only 23 steals is pretty low for Trey Turner, let alone with bigger bases. What's going on here when you look at Turner's projections? I mean, it seems like the industry is already taking the over on a lot of these by making him the 1-1. But what are your thoughts?
I mean, they're regressing his BABIP down to a .324, and he hasn't had that low of a BABIP since 2018, and that was an outlier that year. It was, you know, a .314 BABIP in 2018. He hit .271, but every other year it's been well above that. So I don't see how you could basically drop his BABIP 20 points when, you know, he's a career .344 BABIP. And, you know, any bit of luck with that, that .286 becomes close to the .300 that we'd expect. and you know, there's seasons here with his batting average line of 342, 335, 328. Like, this guy is a batting title contender. I just don't. I think this is a case kind of like we hinted at, where the projection system is just being too bearish and just does not have, you know, a input that's like, okay, hey, this is Trey Turner. Let's tweak our model for this one specific player, right? It's kind of probably just doing it based on whatever formula. You know, he's entering an age 30 season, but I'm still, you know, taking the over on essentially all of those numbers with a little bit of a pushback. I think 19 home runs might be kind of fair depending on where he signs. You know, 28 in 2021 seems like a pretty good outlier. You know, I know for half the season there was still that the rabbit ball going on in 2021 last year. You know, 21 I think is more towards his true talent level. That was still the second highest total of his career. He's at 19 twice before that.
The shortened season, he was on, he was definitely on pace for like 25, 30.
That was also probably peak rabbit ball though then at that point, right? Fair. You know, Washington is a good place to hit in the summer. So it was August and September in D.C. there. So May also probably be a bit of an outlier. Yeah, I mean, you know, he 27 steals last year. I think the 23 are probably low, but I don't know if we're going to see a 46 and 43. Maybe, you know, we'll get close to 30. But again, I it's not like he lost any sprint speed or anything like that. So I'd take 27 as a 23 as a floor for sure. Probably buying the over on that as well. So I think it's low, maybe not criminally low though.
Okay.
And I still think that projected line is like good enough for the first overall pick, right? Or at least top five.
I mean, I don't know. The counting stats especially are
pretty low. That's another one that maybe it's because he doesn't is not on a team, but you know, he's going to sign with the contender, right? Like, he has to. It's going to be a really good team, so those runs will be, you know, at 100.
And sure. Dodger Stadium's not a good homer environment, so I don't know. I would take the over on 21. I still think Turner has every right to shout for like a 25-25 season.
Yes.
And definitely, if he's going to play 157 games, I have a hard time seeing how he doesn't hit 100-run mark. But, yeah, I guess criminally low might be overstating it. And overall, that's a good line anyway. So, yeah, I just thought it was a little interesting out of the gate that it's like, you know, he's just 30. Seems like it's kind of a fade. But as Scott mentioned, we'll talk about throughout the show, Steamer is a conservative projection system. Unless you're Spencer Torkelson last year and they had him projected for like 190 WRC+. So let's keep it moving. We got a lot of names to get through. And this was one you had to defend on the Nick Pollock mock draft of Michael Harris II, who you took in the fourth round, Steve. I know part of that was kind of situational. But you don't have to convince me, man. You know, I rocked him last year in my home league and was a huge fan of the breakout. Now, this year, they've got him projected for 141 games, a 277 average, 22 homers, 20 steals, 84 runs, 78 RBI. Which, by the way, doesn't look that far off.
Different from Turner. Yeah.
So here's my thought with Michael Harris II, looking at this, is I was surprised that the average was as high as 277, even though he was in like the 290 territory last year, just because of the strikeout rate, the BABIP. It seemed like he could do no wrong, and it wasn't the hugest, you know, what was it, just over half the season. So I was more surprised that they gave him an extra 30 games and gave him the same steals total as he had last season with just 20 steals and the 22 homers, when just last year, I think, was he at, what was it, 20?
He was at 20. 22? Yeah, you got 20. You got 20.
Okay.
He was 20 of 22, so got caught stealing twice.
Gotcha. Where do you have his page up on homers? Yes. I'm trying to remember. Was he 20 or 19?
19.
Okay. So they only have him with three more homers with 27 extra games, and they have him at the same steal count. So his ADP is 29. I know some of these, because the NFBC drafts so far, are these mainly like best ball, or what are these drafts?
Yeah, they're draft champions. Yeah, draft and holds.
Okay. So ADP 29, it might not be that expensive for actual drafts, but
for sure,
this is one that we got to talk about because he's kind of a head scratcher. We know he's going to have the helium, the rookie of the year. What did you think about this projection line?
Yeah, they're projecting his K rate to come down a little bit, which I guess makes sense because the K rate in the minors was a lot better. The swing strike rate and chase rate, though, does have a little bit of cause for concern, and 42% O swing percentage on Fangraphs. I would think in order to cut that strikeout rate, that would have to come down a bit. And it seems like this is kind of if my dumb brain were to do a projection, I would project the average to come down further and then bump up the homers and steals based on just sort of the rates, because the barrel rate was really good. The sprint speed was really good. Like I talked about on the podcast with Nick, like everything as far as the homer totals and stolen base totals, like all those skills are good. What's concerning is, you know, the chase rate, some swing and miss, and a potential batting average regression, which, you know, if you told me 277 was what Michael Harris II is going to hit in 2023, like I'm not hesitating at all to take him in the fourth round. It wouldn't have to be a situational type thing where I'm looking for speed or something like that. Like if that's the case, like Michael Harris is going to jump into the first round in a year from now. So as someone who likes him, I'm a little bit more hesitant and think that there might be a bit of an average dip unless we see sort of some compensation for that power when reducing his O swing, something like that, you know. But I mean, he's projected for 120 WRC plus, which is pretty encouraging from, like Scott Chu says, it's a conservative system.
I think a couple other things to mention on Harris too is, one, most of his games last season were in the middle to late part of the batting order. And right now on roster resources,
It took him a while to get a bump up. Yeah.
That's a great point. I mean, now he should be hitting like second in that lineup, or at least somewhere up there. So I think that should really help with the counting stats. On top of that, a theme that has been talked about plenty on those Pitchless mock draft episodes and just around the industry is, if you're in a 5x5, you don't necessarily want a guy who's, if he's helping with average, you don't need to see a huge walk rate, because if he's walking less and he's a good batting average plus to your team, then he's going to get more hits because he's not taking walks. So if Harris is a 277 guy, it might be a good thing that his walk rate is around 5%, not like 10%. So just another note that average could go a long way with less walks and more of an aggressive plate approach.
Yeah, after talking about that with Nick, I looked that up regarding Juan Soto and was like, what is Juan Soto's career high in hits, considering he walks, you know, 20% of the time?
Yeah.
And it was a shockingly low, at least to me. 157. He has never had more than 157 hits in a season, and you know that is because he walks so much. So yeah, in 5x5, if hits is a category, that is that's not something that you should avoid. These high OBP, or you know, it's still a good thing. You're not making it out, you're getting on the bases, you're gonna get a run. If you're a fast guy, you have an opportunity to steal. It's just something to a good angle to consider. Yeah.
For sure. But I think that plays well for Harris with the speed and everything.
Yeah, so. And that also could, I mentioned it with Nick too, like if you're putting the ball in play before you're striking out, like that's a way to combat your strikeout rate. And for a guy that has a good hit tool like Michael Harris, that could be a good thing.
Love it. Okay, let's move to another interesting one. And I don't even know that I'm taking issue with the projections here on Gunnar Henderson. I think it's just a name that we're going to have to quickly develop an opinion on, because there's name value, there's a lot of hype, and his ADP right now is 96, which is crazy for Gunnar Henderson because we've seen so little of him in the majors. But his projections, over 141 games, playing for the Orioles, batting .255, 21 homers, 10 steals, 75 runs, 77 RBI. So this, Steve, I mean, he's a big guy, but he has speed as well. This doesn't seem that off base to me, but I guess the question is, if this line were to be true, 255, 21, 10, 150 counting stats, is that worth a top 100 player pick, or do you think this is just a guy that's like tough to project out?
I think it's probably a top 100 pick if that does pan out, right? Like double-digit stolen bases with 20 homers and, you know, close to an 800 OPS. Like, yeah, that's a really good fantasy player, especially in today's run environment. I just wonder if that ADP is going to shoot up if, you know, he looks good in spring. You know, the fact that he more than held his own in the 34-game sample that he came up with the Orioles in, you know, late August last year. It seems like the Orioles are, you know, going to be a darling sleeper team since they, you know, had a great year last year, have a lot of young, exciting players. So with that, I think we'll be more hype for guys like Gunnar Henderson, Adley Rutschman too, in his own different sense. But yeah, I mean, you know, this is another guy that has had great walk rates in the minors. He doesn't have the O-swing issues that Harris has. So, you know, you can kind of talk yourself into a bit of a better maybe projection for batting average there. Has the speed, like you said. So I can see it. And I think that, you know, people know that these projections are kind of, you know, they reflect more of the downside, and to see something that's that this positive for a rookie, a guy that showed that he could hit major league pitching in a month sample, that's like the formula for a guy to have a lot of helium going into draft season, essentially.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I like third base as because it's kind of a scarce position, but like just browsing people with like similar stat lines or at least projections, like, you know, this is more of a util comparison, but like Ian Happ, 247, 23 homers, 9 steals, 80 runs and RBIs. And Happ is a guy that's not even, you know, his ADP is around like 160 versus a top 100. But I get that you're probably signing up for a lot more of the upside with Gunnar Henderson. It's just tricky, man. Like just a 255 average and not prolific on either one of those. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I had
trouble with third base last year that I'm really going to be targeting one of the big guys, you know, get one before sort of Arenado goes, that I hopefully won't have to make this decision in most drafts. And, mm-hmm. you know, I think that that could also be another thing that leads to his inflated costs. It's like, oh crap, all the good third basemen are gone. Let me grab Gunnar Henderson, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, the other argument in his favor is I think he has that kind of mid-level speed, which is what's rumored absolutely to be the guys who will get help the most with the, mm-hmm. the bigger bases. Mm-hmm. So maybe that, you know, if that 10 steals turns into 15 and he's like a 2015 guy in the heart of that order. Yeah, I get it. It's just, it seems a little pricey right now, but we'll be talking about him all offseason for sure. So we'll keep rolling to another guy who's got a hype train. And Steve, you are the conductor with O'Neill Cruz, who you took in the mock draft and had a good conversation with Nick. I was kind of disagreeing here with Nick because, you know, his response was like, oh, you could get Willy Adames, but the you're not drafting O'Neill Cruz for any sort of stability. And I think when you're in round 7, 8, yes, you're still trying to get a floor, but man, this is like tantalizing upside. So for his projections, let's get into it. They only got him in 130 games. So you got to think for the volume here, bump up anything if he gets to 150 games. 250 average, 26 homers, 18 steals, 79 runs, and 68 RBIs. And that's with a conservative projection system. O'Neill Cruz is exciting, Steve. Talk to me about your thoughts on this. I mean, this was the one that was not at all conservative, in my opinion, if it's just 130 games. If he plays 150, we're talking 30-20.
And this is another one where this is like the projection system kind of hedging their bets. If O'Neill Cruz hits 250 and has a 27% strikeout rate with an 8.7% walk rate and is healthy, he is not going to play just 130 games, and his counting stats will not just be 27 homers. It'll be, you know, closer to 35-40 with closer to 30 steals rather than 19. It's kind of the thing. This is the system saying, hey, there's also the chance that like O'Neill Cruz is so bad that he needs to go down to the minors and fix his 45% strikeout rate, a la my other boy, Keston Hira.
This is the one on Ariel's metrics on the ATC projections where there's like the that range volatility. Of,
yes,
range.
You need the volatility.
He's going to be the highest.
Yes,
by far.
Yes. Which is probably a better way to judge volatility than saying, hey, let's kind of project him for 130 games because there's a chance that, you know, he might not get, you know, there's a chance that he's not in the majors the whole time. You know, if it's 250, like, you know, it's another thing like Harris, like, you know, look out, like that could be a league winner if O'Neill Cruz hits 250 with a 27% strikeout rate. So it's encouraging. As much as I want to be hesitant and kind of go with safer hitters, like, this is what is tempting. Like, this is what, you know, you could fall in love with, like, 27 homers, 19 steals, and 130 games with, you know, you see the winter league highlights from the Dominican Republic, him where he's just like kind of dropping his bat head out and hitting a 450 foot home run. It's another one that the hype is easy to get out of control with.
Yeah, it feels like, you know, Stanton in Miami or something, where like if you have this guy on your team, it's just going to be so much fun to watch him. Unfortunately, he's surrounded by Pirates. However, one thing I thought was interesting is that at this 250 average, which I think we would all sign up for, they had him projected at a 304 BABIP, but he's a career 320 BABIP guy because he just hits the hell out of the ball. So I mean, I'm just wondering if maybe there's even, if he's having a good season, that BABIP could even look better than 304, which it just is upside everywhere, but it comes with so much volatility. And I think the 27% K rate is kind of wishful a little bit, given what we saw last year. Because he was beyond, what was he, 32, 33?
35, 34.9. And then his September, when he was really good, it was still like 29%. So it was still elevated. So he doesn't even need to get it down to 27%. He needs to get to that 29 that he had in September, but that's still a pretty big ask. Like, that's a hard
this is like the Hunter Green of hitters, yeah, with the hot September that you're like praying is the real deal.
He doesn't chase that much. He's just a 32% O swing, but his contact percentage is way down at 66.2%. So there's just so much swing and miss in his game. But you know, if there's any bit of improvement there, look out. And the K rates weren't that bad in the minors. I know it's that's a tough thing to sort of project, and it's harder to hit major league pitching. But, you know, he always improved his strikeout rate when he repeated a level or the next year. So I'm in. I would be much more careful. Like, I would want the chalkiest of chalk hitters around him.
Almost and plan for
exactly, and then like not take another risk with the hitter until the late round, just because there is so much boom bust potential.
Yeah, that's great advice. We will talk about another up and comer that has a much higher floor, in my opinion. But first, we are going to take a quick ad break, and we will be right back. All right, Steve. We made it this far into the show without talking about Vinny Pasquantino.
You need the train conductor hat now. This is your hype train. I'm all aboard though.
I was just thinking, we were talking about Bogman and the Welsh over on in this league, and they play like chicken, where they'll like keep getting more ambitious with a number until one person's like, "All right, I'm out. I don't think O'Neill Cruz is going to go 30-30." And I was like, Vinny P would be an interesting game of chicken, because I can't be more in on this guy. And it's mainly because he struggled so much in the first month of his big leagues. And, you know, we were all so excited about it. And even with those struggles, all the underlyings looked so good that we were like, don't give up. But eventually we were like, wait, is this just a weird profile? And he still finished in 72 games with a 395 average, despite being 295 average. Yeah, that's a game of chicken I would not play. But in the 130 game projection, Steamer has him at 279 with 24 homers, 2 steals, 74 runs, 82 RBI. I think this is another one where they're just throwing 130 games at this. Yeah. Which makes the projection line look kind of reasonable and vanilla. But if you prorated those numbers out to 150 games, that's 28 homers, 85 runs, 95 RBIs. Either way, I think that the average of 279, I would bet the over. And I know that that's a high number to say that, you know, basically a rookie or a sophomore is flat out like a 285, 290 hitter, but I really think he is. ADP is at 91, so it comes with a price for sure, and that could get more expensive. But what was your reaction, Steve, on the Vinny P projections?
He's projected for 141 WRC plus. This is the exact player that came up in the beginning of the show where I talked about, you know, the projection system hedging their bets. You know, he's not going to play 130 games with a 141 WRC plus. He's just not. He would play close to, you know, 162 games if that was the case. And with that, the counting totals would be much better. I am all in with you here, man. His WRC plus by level in 2019 at rookie ball, 152. In 2021 at high A, 154. 2021 at double A, 152. 2022 at AAA, 139. 2022 with the Kansas City Royals in 72 games, 137. Like,
he's good.
He does not strike out. He walks just as much. He has power. Like, you know, I know there was some pushback between, you know, the majors, and there wasn't this prolific power, especially in the beginning. But between the two levels in 145 games, he hit 28 homers. You know, with the deadened ball, like in Kansas City, not a great ballpark. The home run to fly ball rate wasn't super high. It was 11%, where, you know, in the minors, his, you know, numbers were closer to 18-19%. I just don't see a world where Vinny P is going to hurt you. I just think Vinny Pasquantino is just, kind of like a power hitter's dream, where you just have this low strikeout rate, a high walk rate, and a guy that just a masher that can hit for average and for power. I think that this will be a guy that isn't going to go close to an ADP of 100 if that's where he ends up anytime after this year. That's just how good the underlyings are. I'm all in with you, man.
Yeah, and it's worth noting, because we had the conversation with Harris a minute ago, that if you're in a 5x5, unfortunately, Vinny P does walk quite a bit. So as good as his average is, he might be a victim of the plate discipline, where, you know, takes off a base hit per week or something like that. But if that's the worst thing you got to worry about, then sign us all up. So That's Vinny P. We love him. And we would take the over on some of these. And let's move to...
Can we be the official Vinny Pasquantino podcast? Can we declare ourselves that? I don't know if anyone else has, but...
Yeah, if you guys have, let us know. We'll have you on for a show. We'll just talk about him for an hour. It's going to be great. So what's funny about our segue here, Steve, is that Vinny P, despite feeling like such a shiny new toy, is actually 25 years old.
Yeah, he just the same age as this guy, which is crazy.
And he is the same age as Mr. Ozzy Albies. And wow, what a different thing, because here we are looking at Albies and asking the question, is this the same guy that he once was? Obviously, he's had some rough bouts with injury, but now the projections come out and it looks like they're basically projecting him to be somewhat of a shell of what he was, Steve, with the 259 average, which seems reasonable. When Ozzy was great, he was between like 270, 290. They're bringing that down a little bit, and with good reason. He struggled this year. He was batting like 240, I think. So they're kind of splitting the difference. Just 21 homers and 14 steals and 72 runs, 76 RBIs. So this looks, again, kind of, you know, vanilla-ish across the board. I mean, he would help you in most stats with that line. But in 138 games, just having him at 21 homers, 14 steals seems a little light. Curious what your thoughts are high level on Albies, and then we can get into some underlyings and everything.
This is probably, I think I was down on Albies heading into 2021, and like this projected stat line is kind of the reason why. It's like, what if Albies is like a 2010 guy with like a 250 average? That's mm-hmm. not that good. I know we were talking about that with Trey Turner, but you know, that was more of like a 290 average 2020, which is a lot different. You know, Albies did hit 259 in 2021, which is what he's projected for this year, but that came with 30 homers and 20 steals, right? Like that was 10 more homers and 10 more steals than I expected, and that's a really big deal. That being said, you know, rabbit ball, you know, amazing counting stats at 209 runs and RBIs combined. Like that's another thing that can make up for this projection. Like I don't see how Albies would finish with 72 and or 69 and 73 runs and RBIs respectively, hitting anywhere where he will if he stays healthy in the Braves lineup. So I would definitely take the over on that, and that would make me feel a lot better. I would probably split the difference on the home run total between, you know, his 2021 season and 2023. And I think it would look a lot like 2019, which was really good. He was a lot better in 2019 because he hit 295, but, you know, a 260, 24, 15 guy is still a really good player. And I think would be a value for where he goes, or at least at value for where he ends up going. So, I think
perfect,
that's kind
honestly.
Of what I would expect from Albies. And if anyone's kind of lower on that and are scared by the projections and, you know, the injury and the down year that he had, I think that that could potentially maybe be a buying opportunity. What do you have here? His ADP is at 48. Yeah,
it's a little steep.
It's steep, but I think, you know, if he does what we both think he will do, I think that's absolutely totally fair, especially at second base where it's a shallow position. Yeah,
second base is really the game changer there. I mean, he goes right now one pick after Altuve. I think I would definitely lean Altuve there, but then he comes before Jazz Chisholm, who's got his own questions, which, you know, he proved us wrong on production. But then Trevor Story's the next second baseman about 20 picks later, and then after that you're down to like Tommy Edman, who's not going to give you anywhere near that pop, but he should give you more speed. It's an interesting one for Albies, but I really liked your projection there of like 24, 15, 260. And then if he can get closer to like 90-90 with the Braves, then I think you're going to basically break even. So, yeah, it's interesting, man. But if it's what this stat line is, I don't think that translates to pick 48. But then again, maybe at second base it does.
Yeah.
So. Okay. Well, a guy who is not 25 years old, he's actually age 32, but still feels like he is bursting onto the scene, is Christian Walker. If you have not been paying attention at all since your teams basically went out last year, Christian Walker is kind of an industry darling here because of the stat cast, because of the fact that he hit 36 homers, and suddenly that D-backs offense is looking better and better. So Christian Walker's projections had me scratch my head a little bit, Steve, because they got him for 150 games, which is solid, a 253 average, which they brought up 11 points, which is exactly what you want to see. His XBA was good. I think that's where we were like, okay, Christian Walker, this could explode. But just 28 home runs on the projections after he hit 36 last year. And then they have good counting stat or good runs in RBIs with 80 and 91 RBI. What do we think here for Walker's line? I'd be a little surprised if he didn't get 30 homers, but
yeah,
what do we think?
It's probably just a simple regression due to the fact that in 2020 and 2021, he had a 6.4% barrel rate in both years, but led to it this year. His re-breakout, I guess I'm kind of making up a word there after he had that good 2019 season, was the 11.5% barrel rate, which is exactly what he had in 2019. So I guess I see what it's doing. You know, it's saying, okay, it's, you know, maybe he's going to be between those 2 years, but I don't know. It looked like in 2020 and 2021, there just might've been something wrong mechanically, whether an injury, you know, he clearly figured something out again and got back to that, you know, good hard hit rate and barrel rate there. I kind of buy the power. I would say, 28 home runs is sort of the floor. And what is even more encouraging, and I think is the correct thing to do, is that 253 average is really encouraging because, you know, he hit 242 last year, but, you know, if you remember, like in June, he was still batting around 200 and he was just getting, you know, absolutely no batted ball luck and just had, you know, all of these liners. I remember watching these Christian Walker highlights, like, you know, where he hit the home run. It would have been a home run, you know, on the Wooded Dong Twitter. Mm-hmm. It was home runs at 29 out of 30 ballparks because it just missed that overhang in Arizona, right? I remember him flying out there thinking, like, hey, what the hell is going on here? This is why he's batting 200. And then in the second half, he hit close to like 280, which brought up that average a lot and didn't sacrifice too much of the power. So I would tend to cherry pick the good things from this projection and the average and kind of not regress the homers too much. I would say, you know, maybe 32 is a fair number. You know, he did play 160 games last year. But I mean, won a gold glove, I believe. So, you know, Arizona's going to keep him out there at first base, as long as they can. So, it was 285 in the second half with 14 homers in 70 games where he had 22 homers in 90 games. So, you know, the home run pace slowed down a little bit, but nothing that's going to kill you. 285 with 14 homers is a great, great second half in 70 games for Christian Walker.
Yeah, some of those had to be smashing off the wall, you'd imagine. So we talked about it, Steve, on CJ Crone versus Christian Walker, and we were on the record on the show saying we'd prefer Walker over Crone. In terms of ADP, right now Walker is at 141 and Crone is at 114. So that is kind of an early, if we're still there, that's an early draft this, not that. For us, are you still in line with Walker over Crone?
Yes, I like Christian Walker over CJ Crone for sure. Yes.
Yeah, and you don't have to deal with those nasty Coors splits when Crone's away from home. So, yeah, that's a good one there for Walker. Again, that projection line is 253, 28 homers. We're taking the over on that, and terrific runs and RBIs hitting in the heart of that order. Let's move to pitchers, Steve. And we're going to start with another guy who has been your guy, at least on this side of the ball, and that's Shohei Ohtani. who last year was a pleasant surprise on the mound. Another guy you were talking about. I was cracking up when you and Nick went into last year's mock draft, and he was your SP1 in like the eighth or ninth round. And then it looked terrific because this past year we got the volume with 166 innings, a 2.33 ERA, 101 whip, and a 33% strikeout rate with a 6.7% walk rate. Here's the thing with Shohei going into this projection with Steamer, they've got him increasing the volume up to 173 innings, 217 strikeouts. So coming back to earth slightly to a 30.8% K rate, and then a 3.15 ERA, which I think the environment's going to have a lot of ERAs regressing because there's not going to be 12 pitchers with a sub 3 ERA, and a 109 whip. So this looks very, very tempting for Ohtani. And the question is, do we believe that the volume will be 173 innings?
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. It's just a matter of whether you buy the innings. I mean, Nick's also said it on a few of the podcasts. Like, it's really hard to project innings, and the number one thing to project innings is innings last year or innings in the past. But it's also tough because innings in the past is wear and tear, and it makes it harder to do that. So it's such a tricky thing to do. As someone who, you know, rostered Ohtani in a lot of places as a pitcher, and sometimes in some places dual eligibility sort of things, you know, there was no hiccup. There was no misstart to a blister that he dealt with in 2021 or a skip in a rotation to give him an extra day rest. At most, they kind of just pushed him a day here and there, but he really didn't miss a turn. Obviously, he didn't get to, like, you know, the 200 innings because the Angels had a six-man rotation, so there's no two-start weeks or anything like that. So unless there's an injury, which, you know, there always could be with Ohtani, like, I'm buying, you know, 150 to 170 innings, so I'm not out on this projection. It's not like, whoa, like, what is this? I could see it. I just think that where I knew I kind of easily could see that 130 wasn't the ceiling last year, like Nick kind of hinted at in our podcast from last year, I can see 166, 170 being the ceiling, considering that they didn't do any of those like shenanigans of skipping a start or anything like that. Like, this is the top. So I could see maybe sort of hedging and saying 150, 160 innings total for Ohtani is reasonable. That said, hey, I would not regress the K rate or the walk rate or anything. He added a sinker that he throws 100 miles an hour last month and a half of the season. Like, so, like, his skills got better. It's just a question of innings.
Oh, it's insane.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think with injury for Ohtani, a couple notes is that he has had Tommy John.
Yep.
On the other hand, a funny note that, again, I think it might have been Nick and Scott talking as well, but discussing that Ohtani he has twice the injury risk of any other player because he plays twice the amount of time, pretty much, which I thought was an interesting note. But, yeah, I think if the Angels, I know they just brought in Tyler Anderson, it would be really interesting if they made a push for Trey Turner, because right now their shortstop listed as Gio Urshela. And it seems like this still has to be a window for them with Trout and Ohtani. Then they really let him go a little bit. I think you don't need the 173, I think, is what we agree on. It's like if he can get to 160, you're taking that any day of the week. So I like it. And in terms of like the ERA and WHIP, it's going to be great no matter what it is. Whether that's a 3.15 or if the environment's similar and a lot of people are sub 3, Ohtani will be amongst the best this past year. His ERA was 10th in the league. His WHIP was 20th. I think you can expect those ratios. The only thing is he's not the best ground ball pitcher, but who cares when he's striking out as many people as he is. So the next one, Steve, is near and dear to our pitcherless mock draft, where I grabbed Hunter Green. A couple rounds earlier, you drafted Christian Javier, and that was probably one of the shiniest picks in the draft room where everyone was like, oh, there goes Javier, great pick. And it was a great pick. I am backing Javier. What I thought was very interesting is Javier's ADP right now is 87. Hunter Green is about 33 picks behind at ADP of 120. And their projections from Steamer are almost identical. They're both at 168 innings. They've got Hunter Green with 9 more strikeouts, 212 versus the 203 for Javier. Both of those you would take with 168 innings, by the way. And then an identical ERA and WHIP pretty much at 397 for Hunter Green, 398 for Javier, and then the WHIP at 121 and 122. I don't know that I'm buying this one, man. I feel like Javier is can't miss, and I feel like Hunter Green is basically a wild card for upside, yet here they are right next to each other on production and 30 picks away on ADP. So what are your thoughts on this one?
I totally agree. I would take Javier as, you know, close to an SP1. Hunter Green is more of a, hey, you know, it's my third or fourth pitcher, let's take a shot on a guy who could be an SP1. I think that, you know, the fact that Javier only threw 148 innings last year and, you know, started out of the bullpen the last two seasons, has had, you know, a higher walk rates. You know, he did a lot better this year, just an 8.9% walk rate. You know, I know Hunter Green only had a 9% walk rate, but it just seemed like there's more command issues with Hunter Green than there is Javier, right? Javier, like Nick said on my mock draft podcast, like Christian Javier has a top fastball in the league. Like it's top five pitch in the league for any pitcher, any pitch. Hunter Green like had to figure out how to not give up 5 home runs off of his fastball every start, right? Like I remember there was like a few Brewer starts in there where it was just like guys were teeing off of on him, you know, twice an inning it seemed like, and he just couldn't throw a fastball. It looked like he started to figure out that in the second half. Yes, I totally understand that, and there was a great stretch of starts, but I know for a fact that Javier has this amazing fastball, an amazing slider, and is essentially Spencer Strider. Hunter Green, I know, can be this great pitcher, has the velo, has the stuff, still needs to, I think, take a step to put it together to make those projections come true. You know, I could see both of them. I believe Christian Javier's projections more, if that makes any sense whatsoever.
Well, and I just think a huge part of this is what the heck are projections doing sliding Javier's ERA from a 254 all the way back to a 398? And on top of that, the WHIP of 122, where last year the WHIP was 0.95. I know the walk rate still isn't great from Javier. He's not a great ground ball pitcher, but he's fourth in the league in hard contact against. I just cannot see his ERA being much higher than like a 3.6. Like, and that to me is like a floor. And here they are with a 3.98. So I don't know. To me, the ratios is where they're way off on this.
Yeah, I mean, Javier had a 0.95 WHIP last year. He had a 169 batting average against. On top of that, you know, 24.3% strikeout minus walk rate. You know, one of our favorite stats there. So,
hey, hopefully projections all look like this for Javier, Steve. That'd be great news for for sure.
Keep the cost down. Let people not realize how good of a pitcher this guy is.
Okay, well let's talk about another pitcher that will probably be viewed as an SP1. He's getting drafted about 20 picks sooner than Javier right now, and it's Alek Manoah. He's a guy we talked about a couple shows ago, Steve, because, you know, he was certainly elite this year from a ratio standpoint, but the Ks weren't quite there. Now, this is a weird projection because they have him at about a strikeout an inning, and you're going to get the volume. They've got him projected at 202 innings, 198 Ks, which, again, would be a better K rate than last year. But a 4.09 ERA and a 1.24 WHIP, that ERA is almost up 2 whole runs from where he was at this year. The xFIP this year was a 3.98, which is pretty much where they've got him and then some. It's just, I don't know, man. Like, where are we at with Manoah here? Because this is not SP1 worthy if this projection is correct.
Like, I think I see where the downside is coming from. He had a 244 BABIP, an 83% left on base percentage, a .73 homer to nine. So a lot of the metrics that indicate some luck are on his side, or were on his side last year. So, okay, yeah, sure, you can regress those back, but I'm not regressing him down to a 126 homer per nine and 288 BABIP when in 2021 it was a .97 homer per nine and a 246 BABIP with a 76% left on base percentage. So, sure, yeah, the 224 ERA may have been a bit fortunate, but I think it, if anything, it's going to be more like his xERA of 331 last year than a 409. And with that, you know, with the stuff that Manoah has, he had a 12.6% swing strike rate in 2021. You could see some easy growth for strikeout right there, which would just kind of combat anything that would, you know, bring down the, you know, if the BABIP or the left on base went normalized, if there's any bit of a spike in K rate, which I think Manoah clearly has the stuff to have a K rate higher than 23%, that would mitigate any of my concerns there. So I am buying the under on a 409 ERA for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I like the pitcher in general, and playing with the Blue Jays, you know, last year he had 16 wins. I think that's kind of in the equation as well for the ADP, but I don't know. This would be like the earliest you would take your SP1, and when I look at the full picture of like pitchers before him and after him, I got to say, I don't think I'm going to be having a lot of Manoah this
year. I guess who's going around him? Do you have it in front of you?
Yeah, so
and also caveat, this is not the greatest ADP to use since it's draft and hold, but regardless. For sure.
So before him is Shane Bieber and Carlos Rodon, and then after him is Kevin Gausman, Max Fried, Luis Castillo, Zach Gallen.
I don't know. I think I lean Manoah over those guys.
Wow. I think I'd take Musgrove over him. I think I'd take Gallen over him.
Yeah. I don't know. I think I might lean Manoah just based on sort of the potential for, I think, more strikeouts, even though that does seem kind of counterintuitive based on what he had last year.
It might look like a Sandy Alcantara type of, you know, workhorse with the volume, the K rate's not as elite as like a, you know, Scherzer, DeGrom.
Yeah, but and if he does go the 200 innings, you know, I think only three pitchers went 200 innings last year. Like, you know, the rate might not be great, but because he goes so many innings, the counting number still might be there, right? Like, he still had 180 strikeouts in the 196 innings. Some room for upside.
That's fair. Yeah. It's fair. I think the volume and the win potential is something I'm probably overlooking there, but he's an interesting one for sure. Let's talk about another one that is interesting and conservative, is to put it gently, on Julio Urías. His projections, they got him 12-10 with a 4.04 ERA, just a 23% K rate, a 6% walk rate. Urías, you know, it feels like at this point we kind of can bank on some of that production. And I don't know about this one, man. Like, these projections have him at 185 strikeouts over 193 innings. If he's getting that kind of volume, I mean, I guess that's kind of where on like a K rate he's been, but the ratios, he's been sub three for 2 years in a row now, where he's thrown 63 starts with a sub-3 ERA, and they got him all the way up at 4.04. How do we make sense of this, and do we even care?
No, I don't think we care. I think Urías is kind of a guy that has had projections be wrong on him just constantly for whatever reason. He is not a 4 ERA guy. He is a high 2s ERA guy, you know, mid-3s at worst. And kind of has been that his entire career. Like, there's no way that a guy that has a career whip of where is it here? I had it up just a second ago.
Career whip is 109.
Yeah, like how is that going? Like, how is he projected for a 123 whip this year? Like, it hasn't been higher than 1.15 since 2016.
They got his BABIP coming way up, which is not,
That's just not who he is. He has this, he runs these low BABIPs. He, you know, sure, again, 86.6% left on base is high, but, you know, his xERA was a 281. His xFIP was a 381. His FIP was a 371. He's also a guy that just always runs lower numbers than his FIP and xFIP. So I'd buy, like, you know, a 3 ERA essentially for Arias. You just can't use the projections for him. He's clearly got them beat.
So Arias is at an ADP of 49, just ahead of Verlander and Zach Wheeler. What do you think about that pairing there?
Yeah, maybe I can make the. I think I would probably
different things.
Yeah, I would probably go Verlander and Wheeler, but that's not a knock on Urias. I think maybe, you know, volume wise, it's hard to believe that I'm saying that about Verlander. That's what, he's 40 years old, and Wheeler had some issues towards the end of the last year, but they seem much safer locks to go like 190 innings than Arias did. Even last year, you know, he still threw just, I say that in air quotes, 175 innings, but I think that's close to his ceiling.
Yeah, and talking about puzzling projections, Steamer has Verlander's ERA doubling from 175, which is crazy, to a 351, so kind of sheds a little light on the fact that they're pulling all pitchers back to toward like a 4 ERA, which seems a little strange. Similar story for the next guy, and we just talked about Joe Musgrove. Steve, you took him in the PL mock, and you had some regrets. I like Musgrove more so than Manoah, but they've got him projected 194 innings, 3.73 ERA. 23.4% K rate, 6.4% walk rate. And yeah, that is kind of ho hum for a pitcher who you're really hoping could put all the stuff together. He's always been a guy who liked the, you know, Eno Saris stuff plus, has always liked him. I know we've liked him with the Padres. You got to imagine some of the wins are going to start being higher than 11 and 10 for a full season. They do have him projected at 13 wins. But the whip projection is, let's see, a 119. So, you know, I guess they're projecting him as, like, good, not great. But the 3.73 ERA is a little high, which has been kind of the story of the show.
Yeah. I talked about it. I kind of talked myself into Musgrove on the podcast with Nick when I had some regrets. There were some interesting things. He found that spin again in September that got him in trouble with the Mets, or not in trouble, like he was cleared of any wrongdoing. It was just his sweaty ears. But he tweaked something, found spin again, and was really good after a rough June and July. In August and September, Musgrove was awesome. In 2021, he had an amazing curveball and slider. In 2022, it was the cutter that was really good. So it's kind of like, that could be the path if you could pair the great slider and cutter and bump that K rate up to 27% while having, you know, that cutter, just because he's not a primary four-seam guy or fastball guy. If you could pair those two together, like, maybe you can get, the 2022... whip and walk rates with a 27% strikeout rate, which would make a really big deal in those 180 innings. And I think maybe that would be the key from him to going from a top 20 pitcher to a top 10 pitcher. I know, you know, Saris has ranked him in Stuff Plus and has ranked him, you know, in close to a top 10 pitcher. I don't know if he's quite put that together. He's had stretches in the beginning of 2022 and the end of 22. It looked like he could be, but maybe there's just a meshing of the skills from each of the 2 years that might happen, that could have Musgrove take that leap. But another guy that I'm, taking the under on the ERA of 3.73 for the projections.
Yeah, he's a really interesting one because even in his last year with Pittsburgh, he had a 33% K rate and just a 3.86 ERA. And then, you know, once he went to the Padres, the K rate went from 33 down to 27, last year 25, and now they have him projected at 23.4. But I would bet that it goes the other way. I like all the things you're talking about, Steve, that he's kind of developing different parts of his game and is evolving as a pitcher. As those Ks went down, his walk rate followed suit from like 10% to 7 to 6. And I still am not forgetting that the pitching coach for the Padres came over from the Cleveland Guardians, Ruben Niebla, who spent 21 seasons with Cleveland. So I'm just kind of betting on the circumstances and the pitcher with Musgrove just being 29 years old. I like it, man. I'm a fan. I could see myself waiting and waiting and then going Musgrove as a SP1. I think I would feel good about that. But
so kind of what I did in the mock draft. Nice. I'm glad you approved.
Exactly, man. I'm just following your playbook, Steve. Well, let's talk about another guy from your mock draft, Steve, and it's one of your targets for the offseason, which is Nick Lodolo. Talk to me about Lodolo. The projections looked a little better with a 176 innings pitched, a 3.67 ERA, a 28.2% K rate, and then the walk still a little questionable at 8.2%, but he's your target, yeah. Steve. Talk about the projections and just why you like Lodolo.
I mean, this is kind of what I'm hoping for and thinking that potentially you could find at pick, 100, 120 for Lodolo. I get the inflated ERA. It's a tough place to pitch in. He did have his struggles in the first half where he had an above 4 ERA, but I think the second half sort of showed that upside where he had, close to a 3 ERA, or I think it was under 3 ERA, and, a 33% strikeout rate, under an 8% walk rate. Like, that stretch of games was the Nick Lodolo that I fell in love with. What I think could lead to even more success is if he finds the ground ball rates that he had in the minors. He ran pretty high ground ball rates all throughout the minors, like 55, 56, 57%. It was just 46% last year. I know he is a sinker ball, primary fastball guy. But he was at 46% last year, projected for 45% this year. Like, if he can unlock something to pair that really good swing and miss stuff, a 12.3% swing strike rate last year, 29.8% CSW, if you bump up that ground ball rate to above 50% even, like, that's the makings of a fantasy ace. I know that's obviously a lot easier said than done, but that's why I think I like Nick Lodolo. He seems really, really close to tweaking one thing one way or the other to becoming a fantasy ace.
Yeah, it's, 6'6". He's still 24. The ground ball rate, like you mentioned, is room for growth. And, yeah, some of the just the arsenal that he's got. I know, was it Lodolo you guys were talking about the changeup?
Yes, the changeup.
If he can kind of tighten up that zone.
Exactly. He has the curve. He has a hard sinker, which isn't great, but he throws it 95 miles an hour from the left-hand side. Like,
the curve is absurd. The
curve is insane. It's an amazing pitch. But, yeah, if he could locate that changeup a little bit better, then there's three offerings, and, it could take off from there.
Okay, I love it. Well, it speaks volumes that they're, you know, buying Lodolo when almost every other
pitcher,
kind of fading their stats. It's almost like the O'Neill Cruz of the pitcher side when it comes to steamer projection. So same could be said for Hunter Green, though. I think that was one that was really interesting, that the projections were basically buying his riding of the ship for the last six or seven starts.
And both those guys are in hitter-friendly parks, too, right? So the projection can consider that. So for them to be that bullish on Green and Lodolo is very, very interesting. And maybe we should be even more in on both of those guys. That's a good point.
And we'll be talking about them all offseason. But hopefully you guys found this one interesting. That does wrap us up for episode 80. You guys can find us every other week. We should be on Fridays. Sometimes we'll kind of scoot up to a Thursday show like today. But every other Friday, so in a couple weeks, and that goes until Super Bowl Sunday, and after that we'll be back on weekly. But we should have some fun guests coming up. Should be a lot of fun, Steve, just all off season. I'm excited, man. We're starting to get on the cusp.
Oh, yeah.
I'm getting ready to have like my home league banquet where we do awards and draft order and all that, so We're not as far as it seems, you know?
No. It's, you know, the my friends and I always joke. I think I've told this joke possibly on this show or with you, but there's a radio host in New York, Mike Francesa. He's retired now, but he was a legend. That's how I grew up. And honestly, probably why I have a podcast, just because, you know, I love listening to sports talk radio all my childhood. But he would always, like, you know, be in the dead of winter and, like, you know, it's... you know, we got the Christmas, the holidays, you know, before you know it, pitchers and catchers report, then boom, you know, it's fantasy baseball draft season and baseball here. He would, like, you know, run through the things very quickly and basically gloss over and get you to a certain point in time, you know, before you know, like, it's the holidays, it's Super Bowl.
It was that easy.
Then it's Super Bowl, then it's draft season, then it's baseball, and boom, you're there. Like, that's just, that's how it goes. And yeah, I mean, in a sense, he's kind of right. Like, time does fly. So, yeah, we'll be there before we know it.
I love it. Well, you guys can follow us on Twitter at WinsAbovePod. I'm at @Van_verified, and Steve is at @Stav8818. Hey, it's the off season. If you made it this far, we know you guys are patrons of the show. Would be huge if you could go out and give us a rating, review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, wherever you guys listen. But that wraps us up for episode 80. On behalf of Mr. Steve Gisuelli, I'm Van Burnett, and that is Wins Above Fantasy. Thanks for tuning in, guys.
Later, guys. Thanks.